Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming on the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Renegades. Each of my guests is discussing a renegade idea or concept. My first guest is both a doctor and an attorney, kind of a frightening combination there. Once overweight, he now fights to curb this affliction through renegade means. We'll discuss taxing overweight people as a way to change behavior. My second guest is a journalist who's worked for Time and Newsweek magazines, covering the Pentagon, the State Department, the CIA. He's written a book about one of the most colorful characters in World War II America. We'll discuss his latest book, Wild Bill Donovan. My third guest is a Ventura County resident who risked everything to stand up for his personal convictions. We'll talk to the whistleblower who alerted the world to Countrywide Financial's malfeasance, and now he's paying the price for doing what he thinks is right. And if you want to talk to any of my guests or join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Michael Applebaum, MD and JD, is known as the fitness doctor. He's the only medical doctor to have earned six fitness certifications. Dr. Applebaum is the president of Fitness Med Incorporated, which is a fitness consulting firm. He creates customized fitness, weight management programs, and teaches fitness courses. His experiences include working with world-class elite and elite amateur athletes. Dr. Applebaum is in his 50s, and he's overcome obesity, as I said. He's also overcome significant illness, major surgery, and long-lasting interviews. Welcome to the show, Dr. Applebaum. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and how are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you for being my guest today. Looking forward to our conversation, because obesity is a growing problem here in the United States. Some would say it's an epidemic. There's a movement afoot to tax junk food to help curb eating behavior. Now, to me, that's a slippery slope. Who decides what's junk food and everything else? Plus, it's a regressive tax, because the poorest people are the ones who eat junk food typically, so they're the ones that are going to be hardest hit. You take a different approach, however. How would you address this growing obesity epidemic and try to change people's eating behavior?
Well, first off, I don't believe in the concept of junk foods. So the approach of taxing certain foods, however, does have substantial problems. So, for example, today's healthy foods can become tomorrow's unhealthy foods, and vice versa. An example would be nitrites. Nitrites have been associated with cancers, but recently they've been shown to have protective effects on the heart. And antioxidants would be another example. Antioxidants actually raise cancer risks. That would be beta-carotene. Vitamin C, an antioxidant, hampers adaptation to exercise. Vitamins A and E, they're associated with increased mortality. Vitamin E has no cardiovascular benefits, and something called N-acetylcysteine can lead to pulmonary hypertension or really bad disease. The bottom line is that we would not know a healthy food if it bit us in the face.
Okay.
And the problem is that foods also get reformulated, which makes them moving targets, bad for taxation. And in the weight debate, which is what we're talking about, the weight debate, there are no such things as healthy or junk foods. There are only calories, and that is it.
All right. So everything boils down to calories. So how would you approach this obesity problem that we're facing, the consumption of calories? You have sort of a unique take on this. You say don't tax the foods. You have a different way of approaching it. How do you approach it?
Well, there's a right way to do a fat tax if you're going to do a fat tax, and that would be to apply a tax directed at the results of caloric overconsumption. So, for example, mega-sized clothing, scales capable of weighing zoo animals that people purchase for themselves, toilets tested integrity when tons of weight are sitting on it. Nimitz-class wheelchairs, caskets, surcharges for medical cherry pickers, which are now a medical device in order to lift fat people into ambulances and out of their homes, supersized ambulances, and bunion-esque gurneys. These are things that fat people use, and if they're going to use it, then let that be taxed and not tax the calorically responsible, because one is a form of group punishment, and the other is just taxing those people who require the instrumentalities that are a result of their behavior.
All right. Well, help break it down for me, because let's take the example of a gurney or an oversized ambulance for a fat people. Isn't there already a surcharge for using those types of devices? Because they're not common everyday devices that you'd find in any hospital or any emergency room situation.
That may be a matter of individual policy, but if you're going to have tax, individual meaning state or local or business, but if you're going to have a taxation scheme and you're going to apply it nationally or statewide, then you would do it on those types of modalities.
All right. So you're saying in addition to any surcharge, you would also levy a tax on that. And would this tax be a federal tax, or do you see states individually enacting this as a statewide tax?
I think that we need to narrow the focus of the conversation. If there is to be a tax, then this is the way it should be done. Whether it should or should not be done is a completely different issue.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I understand. So that's your take, is this is the best way, or at least this is the most efficient way to do it, not necessarily whether or not it should be done. So let's get at...
It is the way that doesn't punish people who haven't done what they're saying is wrong. When you start taxing the calorically responsible for the behaviors of the calorically irresponsible, that is clear discrimination and prejudice.
Okay, and I buy that. However, if you look at the statistics, more than half of the U.S. population is considered either fat, obese, or morbidly obese. So more than half of the population, some would say it's as high as 65-70% of the population, falls into this category and would be the ones that are taxed. So you're truly taxing the masses and not necessarily the exception. So it's less... It's less discriminatory.
You're taxing those people who use those instrumentalities, similar to taxing cigarette smokers for purchasing cigarettes or purchasers of alcoholic beverages for drinking alcoholic beverages.
Well, there, though, the tax is on the product itself. You get taxed for your pack of Marlboros. You get taxed for your quart of vodka. That's where the tax is applied. And that's where the fast food tax junkies are saying, hey, that's the way to do it. Apply it directly to the food. And here's where I see a distinction, and maybe you can help differentiate it for me. Not all people drink, but all people must eat. And that's where it boils down. That's why you can apply it.
You tax the instrumentalities that are used by the overweight and the obese, and you don't tax the instrumentalities that are used by everybody. So you are taxing those products that are unique to the population that you're trying to reach.
All right. We're talking to Dr. Michael Applebaum, everybody. And, Mike, let's take a look at a different approach that you've got, too. You, as a doctor, a medical doctor, believe that it's right to deny certain treatments to obese patients. Now, what sort of treatments are you referring to, and how would you make the determination whether or not to provide these treatments as a doctor?
Well, let's just go through one and flesh that out.
Okay.
As an example, let's discuss the use of assisted reproductive technologies in order to conceive. Clearly, it would be best for parent and child to wait till the pounds are shed before attempting pregnancy. So before applying these technologies, an attempt should be made in order to have people drop the weight. In fact, after weight loss, the need for ART, assisted reproductive technologies, may be obviated. Because when fat people get pregnant and have kids, there are increased risks. Increased risks to the fetus or embryo include birth defects, miscarriage, which is death, fetal and neonatal death, which is death after embryonal stage, premature delivery, labor and delivery complications, delivery of large for gestational age infants, and low Apgar scores. Now, for the mothers require more cesarean deliveries with higher rates of anesthetic and post-op complications and infections, longer stays in the hospital, increased incidence of blood clots, more hypertension, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, and eclampsia. And the costs to society are dramatically higher for overweight and obese women, between 5-fold and 16-fold greater than for intended-sized human beings, depending on how much extra weight the women carried. This idea of delaying pregnancy and some of these particular high-tech facilitators of pregnancy is not new for me, And even some years ago, the European Society of Human Reproduction and Embryology, the American Dietetic Association, the American Society of Nutrition, Beth Israel Hospital, Mass General, the American College of OB-GYN have all come around to speaking similarly about this matter, which is that women should lose weight before they conceive, and to try to speed up the process through assisted reproductive technologies is not necessarily better for the mother or the child-to-be.
All right,
that would be an example.
I certainly see the case that you're making in this particular example, but I guess what concerns me about this is, isn't this a case of government crossing over into private personal matters, and in specific our reproductive rights, and it's really a case of the government getting into our bedroom? Yes, ideally it would be great if women shed pounds before they get pregnant, particularly those who are morbidly obese. But at the end of the day, that's a matter of personal responsibility. And it's also a matter of personal responsibility whether you want to breed or not to breed. So how do you bridge that gap between what becomes the common good and the government getting too deeply into our own private personal matters?
Well, first of all, whether or not a technology is going to be used is not necessarily a governmental decision. That's a medical decision. So I can't agree with your premise on that. Whether it's medically responsible to do something, you know, you can cure toenail fungus with certainty by amputating the leg, but that doesn't exactly seem medically appropriate.
All right.
Whether something is medically appropriate is different from a governmental intervention.
All right, so you're saying then the doctors who allow this to happen or facilitate artificial reproductive are really being irresponsible doctors. Well, then
I'm
shouldn't
suggesting that there is that interpretation.
Yeah, and then it becomes a question of what is the AMA doing to curb this or to police their own doctors in this particular case?
Well, the AMA is a trade organization. That's a different issue.
All right. So, you know, again, who looks into malfeasance on the part of the doctors, if in fact there is malfeasance for this?
Well, the question is it malpractice to give somebody a life where they're going to end up being a nutritionally abused child? And that's a different issue also that probably ought to be explored. What is the responsibility of the medical community to these children by facilitating their conception and life and then having them become sick individuals when, had they just counseled the patient or attempted to work with the patient in order to lose the weight, the patient and the child could actually end up healthier for it?
And it almost sounds as though you're making the case that the medical profession is being irresponsible in some cases by doing this. Is that the case that you're trying to make?
I think that is an interpretation and a conversation worth having.
Okay, fair enough. Let's turn our attention to something that everybody listening to the sound of our voice knows something about, because most of my listeners are listening to the sound of our voice at work or at their desk. Now, you assert that businesses should also avoid hiring fat people, which I find interesting because studies have shown that companies already will select a fitter candidate over an overweight one, all things being considered. And in some cases, when all things are not being equal, they'll still choose the fitter person. So isn't this being done sort of by natural selection already, and that companies are sort of self-selecting who they're going to bring into the fold?
Well, I can't speak to what every company across the United States or the world is doing. However, if that is what people are doing with their companies, in effect, what they're doing is the right thing. And it's a good business decision, because according to the Fed, and this is the rationale behind the doomed to fail with 100% certainty workplace wellness programs, fat people are less productive, they have a greater level of absenteeism, and they increase cost to the company. So employees who are more costly to a company are less desirable than less costly employees. So preferring not to hire those individuals, if they are paid the same but cost more than a fitter employee, is certainly a sound business decision.
All right, and that sounds fair, and that's very reasonable, but isn't that a slippery slope in the workplace? Because what if a company hires a fit person, but over time that person becomes overweight? You know, is the company then allowed to fire that person simply because the person's going to be a drain on their medical insurance coverage?
Well, local labor laws are local labor laws, so I can't discuss the fire part or not fire part. However, if an employee becomes more expensive and less productive, there are employee reviews, and clearly adjustments can be made if somebody is not working as well as they had in the past.
Ah, that's fantastic. All right. Well, let's talk about personal responsibility, Michael, in the last few minutes that we've got. We're talking to Dr. Michael Applebaum, everybody. We're talking about obesity in general, how we might cure that. At the end of the day, though, isn't obesity about personal responsibility? I mean, we're all responsible for our own health. I mean, that's
100% certainty. Obesity, overweight, are choices.
Yeah. And so, you know, isn't it in part the government's fault that there's so many safety nets that allow people to postpone having to take personal responsibility for their actions, and forcing society, that means all of us taxpayers, to pay for the choices that they make later?
Government is making errors at any of a number of levels. Absolutely. But it's also the private industries that are making mistakes. It's also the sick care industry that's making mistakes. And one of the extremely sad things about all of this is that those people that are turned to and those entities that are turned to in order to provide advice are providing impossible advice, and advice that is really continuing the problem. We are not providing individuals, in my humble opinion, with the proper information necessary for them to relieve themselves of their overweight and obesity. And if the government really wanted to do something, they would go after the, in my opinion, charlatans and nutritionally homicidal advisors, like, for example, in my opinion, Oprah and her experts. And if people are interested, they could see the FTC complaints I filed about her and her experts at jailforoprah.com and understand what some of the problems are with the advice that we are being provided by those individuals and entities that claim to be able to help us.
Wow.
This is a problem.
And we certainly need to address it. Very thought-provoking. We've been talking to Dr. Michael Applebaum, everybody, about obesity in the market, in the world place today in the United States. Michael, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, learn more about your practices and also what you're teaching, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Either fitnessmed.com or drapplebaum, as in drapplebaum.com.
Dr. Applebaum, applebaum.com. Michael, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Best to you and your listeners.
Thanks so much.